parents can't work with them, can't work without them. I'm Stephanie Bergerden of AHA Process, and we appreciate you being on the call. We hope that you find this helpful. Let's see, this workshop is going to provide a fresh perspective on parental involvement, along with some strategies you can use right away. You will also learn about a process that provides a safe learning environment where parents can reflect on and examine their lives, kind of assess their resources and develop a future story so that they can also see how this impacts their child's work at school. During the call, if you have any questions, please just email us at questions@ahaprocess.com. That's questions with an S on the end at ahaprocess.com. Judy will be able to answer those when we get to our question and answer time. I know everybody's time is valuable and limited, so I'll get right to introducing Judy. Judy Weber is from Laguna Niguel, California. I hope I said that right. And has been a professional educator since 1986. Judy taught in high-poverty schools and more recently in a hybrid charter school where students were in the classroom. She was in the classroom with them 2 days a week and in the virtual classroom 3 days a week, which sounds very interesting. Judy has been involved in an ongoing initiative sponsored by Teamwork for Quality Living, which is a community effort to eliminate poverty using Dr. Ruby Payne and Phil Duvall's Bridges Out of Poverty, along with mentoring and circles of support. She also served as a Top Hat mentor in collaboration with the Indiana Department of Education and the Mid-Continent Research for Education. Judy also is a board member of Indiana Staff Development Council and has obviously a depth and breadth in the education environment. Judy was also awarded the Christy McCullough Fellowship in 1988 and is a 1999 graduate of the National Staff Development Academy. Judy also does consulting work for AHA Process and is available to come to your school if you would like her to come and help with your educational environment. Judy, please, we're looking very forward to this teleseminar and working with parents.
Good afternoon and welcome, everyone. I'm glad that you decided to attend. We're going to start out our workshop this afternoon by taking just a few seconds, and I hope for you, if you have a scratch piece of paper, to write down your definition of parental involvement. I'll just give you a few seconds to do that. Between high student achievement and parental involvement at school? Well, mine does, and I know that in my experience with working at school with parental involvement, that the connection between visible parents was a pretty good component. At my school, we had about 3 parents, and that was the extent of our parent involvement. So for us, having more parents obviously just to come to school was a pretty key component. Small does. No relation between the physical presence of parents at school and student achievement. But the correlation is between student achievement and parental involvement. Now, I'll tell you, the first time I heard Dr. Payne say that, I was quite taken aback because, again, with only 3 parents at my school, it was hard to understand what she was talking about more specifically. Now, there's a synthesis of research that comes from the Southwest Educational Development Center in Austin, Texas. And basically what it says is that students with involved parents, no matter what their income or background, are more likely to, and I'm sure I'm not telling you anything new here, earn high grades, high test scores, enroll in higher level programs, after class room credits to be promoted, attend school more regularly, and graduate and go on to college. But if you notice, in that information, which actually came from Title I Parental Involvement, a booklet that was created to help people understand more about parental involvement, notice that nowhere there does it actually say that the parents have to be at the school or for it to be counted as parental involvement. It just says that parents need to be involved. Getting parents specifically to come to school is not really the key issue in student achievement or improving student achievement. Oftentimes, we want parental involvement to best meet our own needs at school, meet our counseling. But we create one voice for all parental involvement. I don't know about you, but if you've ever bought one of those t-shirts that says one voice for all, in my experience, one size fits nobody. But today, what we're going to do is seen as members in one of nine different subgroups. And then we're going to use those subgroups to define parental involvement to best meet the needs of each individual subgroup. So I'll have a layer of community support that will involve a variety of interventions from different scheduling as well as some tools that will help you be more successful in developing parental involvement. So the first subgroup that we're going to talk about are teen career parents. And I don't know about you, but for my husband and I, this is the niche that we fit into. And what we know about parents who are in two careers is that they're very busy. But these parents will read things and keep on telling them what we can give them in the form of a speech. So flyers, web pages were particularly helpful for me, especially when they have homework assignments on them. No one's their email address is so that we can send information to them for it. Actually, when I was a hybrid school, one of the most things was this idea of being able to email parents back and forth, and it really was a wonderful mode of communication. Another idea would be a newsletter, and brevity is very important when we're talking about that. Some don'ts that we might think of in terms of newsletters is don't use jargon. Be very careful about education ease, using words that are created specifically for the institution of education and not everyone outside of that understands the words that you're using. Be careful not to preach. And I know that's pretty easy for me to get on my high horse when I believe in something strongly. You know, maybe you think about another format to interact when you have a major problem you need to discuss. And here's one that's very important. You know what happens when you assume, so we need to be careful not to assume that everyone understands what we're talking about. We want to continuously, when we're interacting, redefine the terms so that we make sure that every time we're talking that, everyone is getting a clear understanding and that we're creating a common language among ourselves and our parents. And then don't limit distribution. You know, don't say, well, I printed 200. If you didn't get one, too bad. You know, what can I do to make sure that everybody gets them? If you do a newsletter, keep multiple copies available in a variety of locations. One thing that we want to think about in terms of a newsletter is to create a short survey so that we can actually hear what it is our parents need. We want to be personal, like as if we're talking to a friend. Use the words we and our, be chatty. We can talk to the center, and if you think back to registers of language, what that means is formal register is the language of school, and we want to make sure that we're very professional and we're interacting with them. But we also know casual register is the language of relationships. So a consultative is mixing those two together so that they're very professional and at the same time we're building relationships with our clients. One thing that I think is so funny is, have you ever gotten an email where there's all capital letters that you're sort of taken aback by that because it feels like someone is shouting at you? Well, that's the same thing in terms of when you're writing in a newsletter. Too many capital letters. Be careful not to use exclamation points because both of those signify intensity. Be brief. You know, maybe a one-page newsletter is all that we need. Think about what students are learning and how to reinforce that. I know last year one of the expectations was that I create a newsletter that went out every Friday. And in the beginning, I spent a lot of time on my newsletter, and as time went by, I started putting in student work that went with whatever we were studying. So we might talk about this, what we worked on this week, and here's some examples. For example, if we wrote a poem, and the parents absolutely loved that. I also like to include a calendar that had at least 6 weeks in advance to give people the information, and particularly for the two working parents, it's very important for them to schedule ahead. So the personal information from someone else. So a really good way of handling that is really just to outline it in a parent contract for volunteers, and then just to reiterate that over time, just to be very aware of that as well. One idea that I got
Judy?
Yes?
Judy, I'm sorry. We're having trouble with the audio, and I'm just wondering if you might be able to adjust the phone. So that it could be a little closer.
How does that sound?
That sounds wonderful. Thank you so much. Yes. Thank you. I'm sorry for interrupting.
No problem.
Great. Thanks.
One idea that I was going to share was when my boys were in middle school, one of the things that the school did was send home a sheet of all the activities for the entire year. And for involved parents, this was very helpful because we had a list along the page, and you could sign up on the date that you were interested in participating. And then what would happen is about a month in advance, they'd send home or someone would phone you, and then I could know, oh, okay, I signed up for this. It's going to be in about a month. I could confirm. And then about a week ahead of time, they would send another confirmation. And that really helped me as a parent, volunteer for in the future and also help the school by having people volunteer and having those slots filled. The next group that we're going to talk about are non-working and uninvolved parents, and that niche of parents can really happen at both ends of the economic spectrum, because you have parents who are busy with their careers, and then you have parents who might be busy working two jobs so that they can survive. So some strategies that might be helpful with them would be phone banks. I know at the school I was at last year, we also had an automatic phoning system that sent messages home and put them on voicemail. We could have a variety of people be involved in those phone banks, maybe parents, student council members, anyone from the neighborhood who's willing to volunteer to do that. Again, that home visit, home contact, maybe little morning coffee classes where you have coffee and donuts and people can meet just as they're bringing kids to school, and different teachers meet with the parents every day. Lots of different ideas in order to help those who are uninvolved become more involved. Now, the next subgroup are surrogate parents, and often these are grandparents or foster parents. And with these parents, if you're talking about grandparents, they weren't really intending to be parents. And as a teacher who had several grandparents in my class, they often needed more support and called me at home to ask for ideas. So one way of handling that might be to assign them a mentor, have a counseling group that's a support group, have an involved parent, and then have lots of community information to help connect that parent to what's happening in your neighborhood, what kind of community resources are available. So you can even have, an area that just contains community resources where someone can come in and connect with that information based on whatever their needs are. So far we've gone through several different of the subgroups. We have two career parents, we have involved parents, non-working and non-involved parents, and then surrogate parents, which often are grandparents or foster parents. I'm going to give you just a minute to think if you have any questions and write those down, actually a couple of seconds, and then we'll move on so that we can continue. So if you have a question, just take a second and write that down at this time. The next subgroup are immigrant parents. And it's important to be aware that I know for me, I had a student in my class who, when we had parent-teacher conferences, she was often doing the interpreting, and we determined that it was probably better for us if we had other people interpret because, you're not always quite sure whether mom's getting the message or she's getting a positive message and she needs to get one a little more serious. One thing you can do with immigrant parents is make short videos that are dubbed in their own language, and you can explain simple things like out-of-school work, how do you talk to a teacher, what happens at the end of the day, what's the dismissal policy, what do grades mean, what is the expectations of homework, and we're not talking about fancy videos. What we're looking for are videos that just give us short information, like myself as the teacher standing in front of a camera just doing a short video and then sending it home to parents in order to provide them with the information. And the trick is really to make sure it's in the language of the family and finding someone who's willing to volunteer to do that. One resource for Spanish-speaking immigrant parents is a book called Welcome to U.S. Schools by Ruben Perez, and it's really got a lot of potential information that might help families that speak Spanish as their first language about registration day, orientation. It's got school culture. There's lots of information there that you might find helpful for your Spanish-speaking parents. The next subgroup are parents working two jobs. And when I was growing up, this was my parents. And so this idea that I have, I believe, would be very helpful for them. You might want to color code information that you send home. So if it's on white paper, it's something that's nice to know, but not critical. Yellow paper is a little more important, something parents might want to look at. But red paper means it's immediately important, please look at. So for my parents, who probably read very little of the information that came home, that would red paper would be a signal to them that they needed to make sure that they read that. The other, I have a friend who was a principal, and her last name was Behart, and one of the things that she did is she made a short newsletter that came home on red paper every week, and that was the thing that parents needed to make sure that they looked at, and she connected that to the word heart in her name. So that was a clever way of color coding to let parents know that the red papers that come home are very important. The other thing you might be able to do, it's very difficult if you have parents working two jobs and trying to manage all things in their lives, is you might call them at work, but not actually to talk to them, but ask them to call you back. So you might call and say, Mrs. Alexander, this is Mrs. Weber, and I know that you're busy, and I don't want to take too much time from your work today, but I do need to talk to you. Could we pick a time that would be good for you to call back? And then hang up. So it's a very short call. It's not intrusive, but it also gives you the opportunity to have a phone conversation with that parent. The next subgroup we're going to talk about are single parents. And really what we're focusing on here in terms of the parent is looking for things that would make life easier for the parent. You know, what kind of things that can make a big difference. We're looking at things that might include the children in the process. I know we used to have a read to your child night and get a book. So parents would come in, there would be some snacks, and then parents and students would sit together and the parent would read or look through the book with the student. You include food. I think one thing to remember is the three F's of interacting with families: food, fun, and friendship, or food, fun, and families. Usually when you have food brought to an activity, you're going to get more people. And then also it's important to sometimes have child care or include the child in the process, because that way parents don't have to pay for unnecessary daycare. And for them, it may be considered unnecessary because they need the money to pay for daycare when children are in school. So the next are parents who are unavailable and students who are their own parents, and I'm sure we've all had some students like that. So what we want to do is, you know, we're thinking about parents who might be incarcerated, they might be mentally or physically ill, maybe have an addiction, they travel a lot, they've had to go back to their native country and their child is here with someone else. So in these cases, what we want to do is spend time teaching the student how to be his or her own parent. For example, I had a student in my class who was constantly late to school, and I talked to the parent, and nothing seemed to be changing. So I spent a lot of time with that student really working on teaching him how to tell time, talking about what kind of programs he was watching in the morning, and if he were more than 15 minutes late, he had to subtract time from his recess. Well, nothing like taking recess away to motivate a student to get to school on time. But again, my goal was to teach him how to parent himself. Also, we might be able to look for linkages to some service agencies outside the school that would provide support to the child. Here's a place where we might look at the resources that the child has available to him or her, and then try to build a resource for them through outside agencies that could provide that need for the student. Another idea that I really like is the whole idea of having a counselor conduct what-if lunches with the student. And I don't know if you've done this with your own child, but I was doing this with my grandson the other day, asking him, what if this happened, what would you do? And the idea is that what we're trying to do is create for the student strategies used in different situations that they may not have been involved in before, in an effort to protect them and give them the appropriate way to behave in that type of situation. The next subgroup is called crazy makers. Anybody have crazy makers in their school? I know we did. Those would be parents who constantly complain, who come in and interrupt. One of the things that Dr. Payne recommends is take the daily rate of the school personnel and divide it by 8 and calculate an hourly rate, and then document the cost of time that's used by that one parent. And the reality is that if the parent is using up a lot of time, not only for the principal, but for the classroom teacher, maybe for the counselor, the school board does not want that parent to take up a large amount of money if we equate that to time. And so often that can help us get through that situation with a parent who is complaining on a regular basis. I love that idea that we equate time to money, and then as a result, it makes it something worthy of the school board to take notice of. So those were our different subgroups. I'll go back and review those. First was two career parents. The second, involved parents, sometimes over-involved, non-working and uninvolved parents, surrogate parents, immigrant parents, parents who work two jobs, single parents, parents who are unavailable, and students who in effect are their own parents, and then parents who are crazy makers. And again, I'll pause for just a moment so that you can write down any questions that you might have for the concluding component of our teleseminar. So the next issue that Dr. Payne really talks about is this whole idea of creating layers and structures of practices that contribute to student engagement and high school completion. So that's really the concept that we're going to talk about now that really is the foundational piece for building a community of support within the school for parent involvement. So really the most important thing here is the ability of the school personnel to create communities of support that are not only concerned about how students perform and express that concern in genuine, effective, caring ways. Now, the question is, how do we do that? And if we look back at Dr. Payne's framework for understanding poverty, we know that we do that through a variety of ways. One would be looking at hidden rules and being respectful of the hidden rules that students bring to school, whether we agree with them or not, but just acknowledging that they're real. Thinking in terms of our tone of voice, are we using a parent, child, or adult voice when we're interacting with parents and children? How do we think about the word respect, and what is mutual respect? And then creating activities, interventions, in order to meet the need of the parent and not just to meet the need of the school. We want to make both of those things work. We want to focus on the child and meet the need of both school and parent. So one way to do that is to create a scaffolding of interventions, and the other is by creating linkages to community groups, which is what we've been talking about as we've gone through this process. So the first suggestion would be this whole idea of mutual respect. And a question you might want to ask yourself is, how are parents welcomed by first-line staff? In my building, we had a secretary that was from England, and she she often came across as very cold and uninviting to, or maybe lacking in hospitality to people. And I don't think she did that on any for any particular reason. It was just how she had been brought up. Things were much more formal in England. And so part of what we did was we kind of recognized that through some surveys with parents and then talked to her about it, and she was totally surprised by that. So really acknowledging what it is like to be welcomed in your building. Who welcomes? Are there signs giving people information like procedures for volunteers? And just really thinking in terms of what it feels like to come into your building. If we think about school design teams, staff, parents, law enforcement, maybe even some students who might identify some issues of support. Again, that you can see how that would benefit the community of support. We talked earlier about home contacts, and really in one school that I worked in, we took a city bus through the community, and it was really the first time that I had driven through the community where my students taught, I'm ashamed to say, and it really gave me a newfound respect for my students, the parents, and also that idea that there were different rules for my students versus for myself in the context of school. And we talked about videos, and I can't emphasize enough how many wonderful ways that you can use videos to interact with parents, whether it be for immigrant parents or just for everyone. In today's world, you can Twitter a video clip. You can put it on Facebook, and we have a high opportunity to impact many of the parents that we interact with, because almost everyone has a cell phone today. Making sure that we're hearing both student and parent voices and that we're truly listening to what they have to say. Another idea, which kind of goes against everything I've thought about in terms of parental involvement, is having activities scheduled on weekends. Ask parents, when is the best time for you? And it might not mean that every teacher would attend on the weekend, but that we could take turns and sort of straggle the different teachers that are coming too. We want to make sure that our parent involvement activities are varied and that they're targeted to these specific niches that we've been talking about. You know, we might do something like free donuts for dad and do it every, you know, the first Monday of every month. I know that my boys on Mother's Day one year, they greeted me at the front door of the school. I wasn't allowed to go any further than the entryway until my son came and he brought the carnation for me and then he escorted me to the room. It was the best parental involvement for me. I enjoyed that very much. So looking for ways to specifically target that. And I know, you know, Grandparents' Day, many ways that we can interact. And then another one might be a picnic for everyone who lives at the student's house. So that way you're pulling in more people that can be involved. Now, one idea that I think is very good is what kind of support mechanisms do we need to put in place for parents that will involve follow-up for them? And one thing that I've done in the past is to take small business card size magnets and put pieces of information on that size and ask the parents to put those on the refrigerator. Those could contain specific dates for a celebration. They could contain the phone numbers, contact information, but they also could contain content area things. For example, if we're working on long vowels and short vowels, we could put that on as a tool for students to work on, multiplication tables, a variety of ways to do that, and just put them on there. Stickers that give the child, the parent can give the child for good behavior. So that idea of, you know, what can we do for follow-up? Now, here's one that I think is very interesting, that we have to overcome our reluctance to participate in parental involvement because we might create one-on-one relationships. We know that the key to all parental involvement, as it is in learning and interacting with students, is this idea of creating relationship, and that relationship will lead to mutual respect. And also, these one-on-one relationships, what they do is they help us understand more fully the idea of the hidden rules. And sometimes through this one-on-one relationship, we can even have a partner who will help bridge the gaps that we have in understanding what the hidden rules are. As a matter of fact, it's one of the best ways to learn hidden rules of a group is through a relationship with someone who understands them and can explain to us in a very positive way. The next piece that we're going to look at are, have you ever thought about tools for dealing with difficult parents? I know for me, one year I had a parent who was angry with me and who came into our building yelling at me. And the closer he got to my classroom, actually it was a she, the closer she got to my classroom, the louder she yelled. And her body language was very involved in the process. And, you know, I could hear her coming, and I thought, what in the world am I going to do? We had no process or procedure for handling that. Really hadn't been in that kind of a situation before. But what ended up happening is that teachers could hear and came, and we walked with this parent down the hall. But what if we had, you know, a procedure that would help us in dealing with a parent like that? Let's say, for example, you know, if we hear a parent angry, all available teachers immediately go to the area. Be sure to talk to the parent using only the adult voice. Make sure that you show strength. Don't back down, but do not slip into the parent voice, because we know that when you have two parent voices interacting, that there's always an escalation. Remain calm and try to seek to understand what that parent wants. For me, what had happened was we had a contest for candy selling, and I'd sent home 10 candy bars. And when her child got home, she had 9 candy bars. Well, if she would have told me that, it wouldn't have been a hard leap for me to recognize that I might have just counted out 9 candy bars instead of 10, and I probably would have just given her one. But there was all this shouting going on, and I wasn't quite sure what to do. And as a result, when I finally got down to it, the parent thought that I had cheated the child. The parent loved and cared about their child. And so also using language that's very inclusive, I know you love and care about your child. As a result, that's why you're here today. So what can we do, again, that inclusive language, to be more successful with your child? It is my goal to work with you to help your child be very successful. So that whole idea of how can we interact with parents to keep things positive, one thing we might do is stay away from why questions. Because really, have you ever been able to ask a why question when someone says, why did you do that? And you start to think about it? Sometimes you're not quite sure. And the same is true of parents. So we might begin with words like when, how, what, or which. When he did that, what did he want? How will we help him be more successful? How will that help him win? And so as part of that procedure, what if we had a list of questions that we were all familiar with? If we had a room where we tried to handle conflict resolution, and in that room was this list of questions laying on the table, how would you like to follow up? Which way would work best for you? What's the worst case scenario? What's the best case scenario? And again, you can see how these questions can help to get to resolution. We want to stay away from statements and make sure that what we're doing is using data, using true information and questions to get to whatever it is that's bothering the family. Here's one that's very important to do. Be careful of using fuzzy nouns and pronouns like everyone, them, all, women, men, kids, things that are generalizing. You might say things like specifically, who or which person are you talking about? You know, be careful of vague words like it's better. Better than what? What does that mean specifically? So you can see that some of the questions, some of the language that I'm using now is very important in order to always be in the adult voice, to always be seeking to understand before you try and answer any of the information. If you get an emotion statement, you're racist, then you might want to restate that in a way that's more appropriate. And that way you can, you know, help clarify and then lower the level of intensity. Also, another thing to do would be think about the hidden rule that might have been broken and that's causing this anger and the break in relationship, and then try to identify that. You might say something you know, like, we did that to keep your child safe, or just as we don't allow other parents to come in and tell us what to do with your child, we can't allow you to dictate what happens with other people's children. And that's an important way of, you know, taking the situation and helping them to see it from the perspective that you have. I know also for me last year, I told you I worked in a hybrid school, and many of my children were homeschooled, and as a result, many of the parents had also been teachers. And so often they would say to me, well, could you try it this way? Because that's what works for me. And what I had to keep remembering and reminding the parents is I have 50 students that I'm interacting with, two different groups of 25, and you have one or maybe three students. And so I always have to think in terms of how can I complete this task in the best interest of all 50 students. And because it works for you with one student, it may not work so well for me in terms of doing that for 50 students in one day. Some language that you might think about using with parents, depending on the parent that you're working with. If you're working from a parent from poverty, some phrases that might be helpful is, this will help him and her win more. This will keep him or her from being cheated. This will help him or her to be smarter. This will keep you safe when you're old. And thinking about your language and also connecting it to the hidden rules can make a huge impact on your interaction with parents. And having both experience in schools of high poverty and schools of influence, it truly makes a difference. I know in the school I taught in last year, often I had to cite the research in talking to parents about things because they were aware of research and they wanted the connection from me. And in schools of poverty, I could have done that, but I'm not quite sure that it would have had the same impact. Again, in poverty, our goal often is to survive. And in affluence, we're looking for we're looking for high levels of knowledge. One thing you could say to a parent with affluence, and I often said this, is this coping strategy will help him or her be more successful in college. I know that your goal is to get your child to college. When will this be part of his or her responsibility? This will have him or her have an advantage. And this I use tremendously a lot. This is a legal requirement. It is not my choice. It is what I am expected to do in order to meet the legal needs of the student. Another one that worked quite well is this is an investment in your child's future success. Now I'm going to pause for just a moment and let you write down some more questions, and in just a few moments I'll give you a few more strategies, and then what we will do is take questions. And don't forget to email us those questions at questions@ahaprocess.com. So we've talked about a mutual respect, home contacts, listening to all voices, including student and parent voices, scheduling activities, and again, unconventional times, varying and being very targeted in our parental involvement activities, making sure that each of those subgroups have some parental involvement to meet their needs, making sure that we are truly listening and finding the need of the parent niche and meeting that niche. Really working to create one-on-one relationships, to develop understanding of the hidden rules, and also to create a community environment. Thinking in terms of how can we deal with difficult parents, what types of procedures can we put in place in order to make sure that we're meeting the needs of the teachers and meeting the needs of the parents. What are the networking capabilities in the community? Do we ever have, just coffee and parents can come in and just, you know, talk and teachers can just meet with them? Something very simple. I know my son was looking for a job recently and he started going to these networking meetings and basically they had coffee and they interacted. People took their cell phones with him and made appointments. It was a good support piece for him in trying to find out what he needed to do in order to get a job. But in the school setting, it's also a good way to learn people to help you move from one group to another group in learning different ways that people interact. And again, those hidden rules. Have you ever thought about giving awards to parents, and not just those over-involved parents, but all parents? Have you had parent-teacher conferences led by the student? I know many schools do that and find it very successful. Do you open your school to having computers used? How about the athletic facilities? Are those available? Is there a way to create a community center within your school so that the school becomes a place people want to come? I know for me, my father did not have positive school experiences, and he felt the loss of his education his entire life, and so school wasn't a place that he wanted to go. So trying to recreate positive memories for people who've had negative school memories really can go a long way into getting parents involved with their students' education. Have you ever thought about partnering with a school that has just tons of pro involvement and trying to find a way for you to benefit from what they already have in place? What about peer mediation training for students, which steps itself into peer mediation training for parents? Have we taken time to teach students how to be better friends, and how would that impact what's happening at home? How about a block party? And maybe not just one, but planning two or three in the school district so that, again, what we're doing is building this community of support. And then finally, one that I think is really, truly important to think about is what pro-involvement enhances the lives of parents, not based on what we think, but based on what the parent thinks. Are we asking them what kind of parental involvement will be helpful to them? So in the past, the concepts that we've used to involve parents have kind of been one way, you know, they're very meeting-oriented, very linear. And today we have to be a little more, have to think a little differently in order to meet the needs of today's parents. We have to scaffold relationships, interventions, activities, mutual respect, conflict resolution, and then target our parental involvement to create a community of support for parents in order to help us work with parents in a way that does impact their students. I'm going to stop here and take any questions. David, I haven't received any questions. Have you gotten any questions?
I heard from David that he's not received anything yet. Just a few comments about when we have lost connection. So we know that there are lots of people out there. We know that we have big numbers for registering for this event, but no questions yet.
Okay, and this is a good time to send your questions to David. And Stephanie, could you say what that email address is again?
Sure. It's questions, with an S on the end, questions@ahaprocess.com. And we did just receive a question, and it says, could you please give an example of a response when you're told that you're being racist?
Well, I've actually had that happen to me twice. One was actually in that situation where the parent was angry about the candy. She felt like I was being a racist, and, you know, it sort of takes your breath away. To tell you the truth, that's pretty much what happened to me. I couldn't fathom that anybody might think that. But when I got down to, I continued to ask her questions. And when I got to the place where she thought that I was being unfair to her child, and I just was able to restate that. So, you know, you felt like I was being unfair to your child because she only got 9 candy bars instead of 10. It was amazing because she said to me, yes. And I think that was really what I was trying to get at when I was talking about going through different ways of trying to understand. So, you know, you try to come up with a sentence that restates really what the person's saying. Like, you know, I sense that you feel the school is unfair. Can you give me a specific example that would help me understand? And in this case, she thought I'd been unfair. Now, another example was I recently did, last year, we did a research paper activity, and the children were able to choose their own topic, and it was supposed to be about a person in history. And so this student just really, when the kids were all telling me, they were taking turns, and they were just sharing why they chose the person they chose. Well, my student stood up and said she chose somebody, and I wasn't familiar with that person. And then she said, and I said, so why did you choose them? Because my mom told me to. That was her answer. And I said to her, well, it's, you know, part of the joy of writing is writing about somebody that you know and that you love. And so I think you should go home and talk to your mom about it again and really revisit why you're choosing that person. Well, the mom thought, because this was an African-American historian, that I said that because I was racist. Well, I didn't have any idea of the race of the person. I didn't know the person, which maybe was unfortunate in the first place, but she sent me an email that was, you know, scathing, and I about had a heart attack. But what I did was I called her on the phone, and I said to her, please let me explain what happened to you. And I told her just what I've told you. And she was horrified because, you know, I hadn't said anything that was racist at all. And as a result of just being calm, again, you know, using my parent voice, which is often difficult to do, she was fine. And she and I became great friends, actually, in both cases. So I think it's remaining in the parent voice, be careful of your body language, making sure that you're not sending information you don't want to be sent through your nonverbals, using the adult voice all the time, and that's very hard to do often because we want to respond based on what we're hearing. And also, you know, I felt I was accused, you know, unfairly. And so at first I had to give myself a little bit of time because it hurt my feelings, to be perfectly honest with you. But when I explained to the parent what happened, immediately she was consoled by that and apologized to me profusely and several different times. I don't know if that helps or not. And David, I am not on a speaker. I have the phone up to my ear. Hopefully I'm sounding better now. Are there any other questions? Did that question, did I answer that question adequately, whoever sent that question?
Well, it sounded great to me, and hopefully it helped the person who sent it in. And let's see, yes, the person is saying, I didn't hear very well what a good definition of parent involvement is. What if you could explain that again, that would be great.
Sure. So I think what I've been saying in terms of parental involvement is that first and foremost, we need to think about parental involvement as a variety of ways that parents can interact with their students, and that it's not just the way that as a classroom teacher I thought about parental involvement. For me, there was a time when I thought parental involvement meant, you know, parents come to the school every time there's a meeting, parents make their parent-teacher conferences and they're never late, parents don't take up more of my time in that parent-teacher conference than is available, and that parent-teacher meetings often are in within my time frame. And I think what this is saying is that we have to look at the population of parents that we're interacting with, and what we need to do is to create parental involvement to try and meet a piece of everybody and to create this community support system that will in some way meet the needs of all the different people. So it's looking at it instead of what I think parental involvement looks like, it's looking at it, what are some ways that I can look differently at parental involvement? How can I look at each one of these niche groups and determine what parental involvement will meet the need of that parent? And in doing that, I'm going to increase the involvement of parents, because I'm going to cut back on stereotypes. I'm going to be more respectful of each individual's personal needs. For example, if I have parents who are working two jobs, in order to be able to survive and provide food for their children, and electricity and the, you know, transportation, then I'm not going to be critical of that parent who cannot physically come to the school to the ice cream social. I'm going to understand that that parent may participate in some other way, by reading the newsletters, by taking a look at homework and interacting with their students. It's really about opening your mind to the possibility that parental involvement can happen at home and not at school. It doesn't always have to happen in the context of the school building. Did that answer the question?
I think that was pretty good. At this point, we don't have any more questions that I have, Judy.
Okay.
If there's anything you'd like to sort of wrap up in the last 5 minutes, feel free, or we can end now. It's up to you.
Well, I think basically what I'd like to end up saying is that, you know, we have, as schools, used concepts to involve parents, and they tended to be very one way. I am the teacher, and as a result, the teachers come together and we create what we think is the best way to involve parents. And at my school, when we did that, we didn't get a turnout. And so trying to ask parents and students what it is they need, and then meeting that need. One program that we have within AHA that is very helpful is called Getting Ahead, and that is a method of interacting with parents that really helps them understand Ruby's work. It helps participants who decide to get involved in Getting Ahead really work together around a kitchen table format to co-investigate some of the principles that we've taught or that we've all learned as teachers about parental involvement. So we're taught, or I'm sorry, not parental involvement, but about a framework for understanding poverty. We might explore the themes of lives, assess our resources, we begin to help parents build their own future stories, to make their own choices, and to acknowledge that parents from poverty have powerful skills in problem solving and controlling their own lives. You have a group of 10 to 15 people, and there are about 15 to 20 sessions, and they're 2.5 hours long. You have a facilitator, and the facilitator is a co-investigator, someone who sits at the kitchen table with parents and helps them to think through the issues. And really, the way that this whole piece begins is with the idea of what is life like today? And we would create a mental model that would help the parents understand and really just create a visual for what is life like today. And then based on that, we create goals for what life would be like in the future if I could create a future that's different from the life today. And as a part of that, we have parents then understand resources and analyze their own resources, and we provide ongoing support. This Getting Ahead information is available on the website. And it is actually, there are two books, a facilitator's guide as well as a participant guide. One issue with this is that you really have to read that facilitator's guide and make sure you're following the guidelines in order to work with Getting Ahead. And I'm going to just leave that as something that you might want to investigate on your own as we're nearing a closing time. So if you're interested in the Getting Ahead information, I would recommend that you take a look online and find out more information about that, or you're welcome to contact me. I'm going to give you my email address and phone number. You are welcome to contact me. I'm available to do several different workshops, and you may also contact the AHA office for that. My email address is Weber, W-E-B-E-R, underscore, Judy, J-U-D-Y, at yahoo.com.
Well, thank you so much. Yeah, our hour is about up, and I know everyone's time is very valuable. So at this point, we'll go ahead and close out the call. We really appreciate you spending your lunch hour with us. And I hope you learned some stuff. I certainly did, and I appreciate you taking time out of your day to share with us. If anyone comes up with any questions as we close here, feel free to send them to the questions@ahaprocess.com email address, and I'll get those to Judy, and I would imagine she'd be fine with it getting back to you as soon as she can.
I would be happy to. Thank you.
So thank you very much, Judy, and thank you everyone for joining us. If you'd like a recording of this, I apologize. We had some technical difficulties earlier. I hope everyone can hear okay, but we will have a recording up. Just keep an eye on your email if you got this invitation, and you'll get the next invitation, which will have the recording in it. And recording also tends to be in our newsletter. So just keep an eye out. Thanks again for joining us, and thanks again, Judy. And at this point, have a great day, everyone.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.